This is the Monday Morning Quarterback Podcast with Andy Benoit and your host, John Engel.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the MMQB Podcast. I'm John Engel here with Andy Benoit. You can always join our discussion by following us on Twitter at Andy_Benoit or at Engelsangle for myself. A lot of news around the NFL this week, Andy, that we have to get to, including a coaching change there in Oakland. And also, Owen Daniels, tight end for the Baltimore Ravens, will have an interview that Andy did earlier in the week later in the show. But Andy, we'll start off with a very interesting game this week with the Patriots and the Bengals. Bengals coming off bye, and the Patriots coming off
They took a bye as well.
A bit of a bye themselves, yeah.
Yeah. I cannot believe the overreaction to that game. And I guess we're part of it because I told you before the show, let's move them up in the order of the games we're talking about because everybody's still – we're late in the week now and everybody's still going over the Patriots. I don't think I've ever seen anything like this in September slash early October.
Well, but I think that's a bit of the key to your amazement too, because this is very unfamiliar territory with Bill Belichick and Tom Brady. We're not used to this.
Is it?
Are we used
to
uneasiness with the Patriots?
I remember them getting blown out 31-0 years ago, coming off, I think, their first Super Bowl. So the 2002 season, something like that. Maybe it's the 03, 04, one of those years.
This just feels a little different, I think, because it seems less easy to correct this time. Because no matter which way you slice it, Tom Brady still doesn't have the weapons like it's been elaborated on a dozen times. He doesn't have those options on offense, and they're not going to just emerge.
I think they have the weapons. It's a matter of how they use them. I mean, for one, where was all this? And we have heard the Brady's weapon things before, but where was all the pounding of the table about the weapons before they went 2-2? Because last time I checked, when they went into the season, they didn't have the weapons entering
right,
the season.
Right, and they were AFC favorites.
Yeah, and I picked them, and a lot of people did. And they didn't have the weapons, quote-unquote, the weapons last year. So where was this is so reactionary of everybody to say, well, they don't have the weapons. And what Belichick's not carrying his Belichickian weight anymore. Look, they had a horrible game. They're 2-2. They're not off to a great start.
Horrible road game. It should be noted that they did go into Arrowhead. It's not exactly a walk in the park, regardless of the weapons you have.
They're 2-2. They're 2-2.
I think
there's been legit discussion, at least legit questions about the end of the Brady era, or is the Brady Belichick era still great? What in the hell? They're 2-2.
Yeah, but at the same time, I see week 5 going one of two ways for the Patriots. Either they get creamed by Cincinnati, or we see this kind of narrative that seems to come by time and time again. You beat up Bill Belichick and they come back.
Right. And
roaring.
It's only the Patriots can bounce back, and they showed us.
You know what I mean, though.
Yeah, no, I know. I'm agreeing with you. It's going to be overreaction regardless of what happens this Sunday. Let's touch on the Bengals real quickly.
Oh, let's get to some football, actually.
Yeah, we're going to talk football. We are going to talk about what's wrong with the Patriots here, but we have to tone down the overreaction. Let's analyze what's gone on for four games. Let's not talk about the Brady era. That's not going to come to a close anytime
soon. And it doesn't help the conversation at all. So, elaborate.
Bengals are a good football team. That's not a news flash. They have been a run-oriented offense. Andy Dalton's been a complimentary player for them. And the reason they've been able to do that is because they have the number one scoring defense in the league. And I love defenses that dictate the terms of engagement. And they have that. Paul Gunther's been phenomenal with his blitz concepts, especially double A-gap pressures out of third down packages and nickel packages. And they're going to throw a lot of that at Brady. And Brady has not always been comfortable. Most quarterbacks aren't. But Brady especially has not always been particularly comfortable with pressure immediately in his face. And we know what's going on with the Patriots offensive line. And that is what's behind their woes right now. And that could be problematic in this game. The Bengals are going to command one-on-one matchups for somebody inside. And they're going to get a lot of one-on-one blocking for Geno Atkins against those what are really bad New England Patriots guards right now. So that's a concern in this game. That doesn't mean that doesn't mean the Patriots world is about to come to an end. Even if they lose this game, the problems that they have are correctable over the course of the first half of the season. They're going to have to reestablish some of their identity on offense.
Back to the Bengals real quick. You mentioned that they've been a run oriented team and that Andy Dalton's been a compliment, much like we've talked about with the Cowboys and their success. But Giovanni Bernard is only averaging something around 3.8 something yards per carry. It's not great. It's three.
Is he really
3.36 yards per carry?
See, I don't look at the stats.
I know you don't. That's
year.
Why I'm bringing it up. And they're 15th in the league in rushing yards per game.
How many? Where do they rank in attempts per game? Or even better yet, is probably percentage of. And I know you can't just go looking this up right away, but my guess is they rank high in percentage of plays that are running attempts.
They are tied for 17th with total attempts with Atlanta.
Okay.
So, I mean, they're very, very middle of the pack.
Yeah, that surprises me. It's still, and look, when we talk about running teams, it doesn't necessarily just mean they're running the ball, and especially between the tackles and all. I guess we're talking about teams that have a controlled passing game, and I think of running teams as teams whose passing game is based off of their run game. So they throw out of run formations, they have play action, whatever it might be. That's where the Bengals have been this year, and that's why I'm saying Andy Dalton's a complimentary player. I'm really surprised about Bernard because I think he's looked fantastic this season, and he's excellent in space. He can create his own space. I think he's a top five running back or on the cusp of that.
What's interesting about the Bengals is we will frequently go back to how great their defense is year after year, really, for
perhaps,
the last few years.
But
this year it's been the secondary that's really popped out. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, I have. And I thought last year the secondary overachieved. Terrence Newman and Pacman Jones, Adam Jones, I guess, they played the Lions' share of the snaps, and now they're back in the nickel together, and Leon Hall starts for them. And Leon Hall has looked excellent in the slot and out on the outside as a man-under cornerback, as a zone cornerback, and he's coming off his second Achilles injury. Terrence Newman, I don't know how he keeps – I mean, he's 35 years old. There aren't a lot of 35 – there aren't a lot of 32-year-old cornerbacks. And they have a good understanding of the help coverage concepts that Gunther does behind their blitz stuff. They do great job with disguising and rotating coverages. And notice the guys we're talking about are these veteran guys. The Bengals have tried to go young cornerbacks before. They had Dre Kirkpatrick in the first round a few years ago. They drafted Darquez Dennard this year, Denard. His cousin is Dennard. He goes by Dennard. They're going to have to straighten. Oh, he's playing his cousin this weekend, too, actually. They're going to have to straighten that up. But they draft these young cornerbacks, and the guys don't play right away. And we're seeing that because there's a lot that goes on there. You don't just line up and play press man-to-man in Cincinnati. You play help concepts, matchup zone stuff. It's not easy to do.
Well, and that matchup zone will stack up favorably against the Patriots for them. I mean,
well, I think everybody's
may not
stacking
be, well,
up favorably
but it,
right
that's
now.
That's what I'm saying. It may not be the end of the Patriots or the Brady era, but this is still going to be a big mountain to climb if you want to get past this defense, especially the way they're working now.
It's not going to be done in traditional ways. The Patriots aren't going to just line up and have their guys start playing better and all of a sudden it goes well because they don't have great wide receivers. That's true. The criticism of them at wide receiver, you could argue it's fair, although they did spend a second-round pick on Aaron Dobson, and they did sign Danny Amendola last year, and they signed Brandon LaFell this year. So it's not like they've done nothing at wide receiver, but those also are far from big-time names, and we're not talking about anybody that draws double teams. So if you don't have receivers that can win one-on-one, you need to create mismatches for them. And that's what they did so well with Edelman last year. He had 111 catches. I don't know what percentage of them. My guess is it's about 50% came in the slot matched up against linebackers or something. Edelman's not getting it done right now, or at least he's not a guy that's going to carry the passing game on his own. I think what has to change is, A, they got to wait for Gronkowski to get healthy, but B, in the meantime, they have to manufacture more mismatches. And the guys that can do that are Shane Vereen, and I'm going to bring up my guy Tim Wright again, even though he hasn't played and he's been next to nothing for him. I think at some point, hopefully, he'll grasp the offense, and I think he's going to be a big factor for them because those are the guys who can get matched on linebackers and safeties, and that's where Tom Brady makes his hay.
Well, and you need that from Shane Vereen, especially when Julian Edelman's being used in an entirely different way than he was initially in his career. So,
or at least he is at times. I mean, yeah. They're still putting him in. They're going to still keep Edelman in the
so
slot.
So why hasn't Shane Vereen been seeing those looks? Because, he's a great receiving running back, and that's a great way to use him. It just hasn't really happened.
He's had four or five catches in every game except the Vikings game where he had zero catches, but they didn't wind up needing him as much. So the touches have technically been there, but when you watch a Patriots game and when you watch them on film, you don't get the sense that Vereen's an integral part of things. that you don't get the sense that the defense is having to account for Vereen on every snap and out of every formation. And that surprises me because I think that's what they – I think that can be their big mismatch creator in the meantime while they wait for Gronkowski to become Gronkowski again.
We also need to see a lot from the Patriots defense who, against the Chiefs, we saw a lot of misdirection from Andy Reid and the Chiefs, and then just not a lot of response or stability from the Patriots.
See, I knew you'd steal that misdirection thing.
You watch one Monday night game,
and there goes the whole point I was going to make about the misdirection.
Sharing is caring, Andy. But what I'm trying to say is, outside of these top-tier quarterbacks, pressure is really important, and that's important to get to Andy Dalton. And the pressure didn't come against Alex Smith, and he feasted.
Yeah, so the Chiefs did two things against the Patriots defense. Well, okay, there were two elements. One is what you touched on, the pressure didn't get there. And really where that came from was also the misdirection, where the Chiefs did an excellent job with misdirection in the running game, and they used the Patriots' man coverage against them by sending receivers in the opposite motion that the play cutback was going for the ball carrier. So Jamaal Charles bounces outside to the left while Dwayne Bowe runs a ghost reverse action to the right or something like that. And what happens is when you do that, those man-to-man corners follow the receiver and they take themselves right out of the picture. You also create very favorable run-blocking angles for your linemen. So a guy like Eric Fisher, for example, who's having a very good season in run-blocking, much better than he was a year ago, but you can really give him an advantage over a guy like Chandler Jones, not by having him drive Chandler Jones off the ball, but by having him seal him off and hook him and take him at different angles. It becomes a different type of football. And it's manufactured offense. And the Chiefs did a great job with that against New England. And I think that's something the Patriots may have to be – they're going to have to account for because that's been put on film now. And we saw that Chandler Jones can be run at. We saw that the man-to-man can be manipulated, which we knew that going in. But we saw a great way of how the Chiefs did it. And they also did it through the air. And that's why the Patriots didn't get a lot of pressure, is because they were having to sort out which direction everybody was going in. It was a really good game plan. And Cincinnati does a lot of the same type of stuff. They have similar personnel, in fact. Dalton's not a whole lot unlike Alex Smith, and Giovanni Bernard stylistically is not a whole lot unlike Jamaal Charles.
Well, and it should be noted, too, that Andy Dalton still hasn't taken a sack.
Has he not?
No.
Yeah. Well, he hasn't had a lot of dropbacks. And John, that's what also comes out of the running game. So when you're a run-based team, and maybe the numbers don't say it, but when you're passing the ball out of running concepts, then you're going to minimize your sacks because the pass rush is slowed by the run action. You're not having guys spread out and with five-man protections and defensive ends at wide nine positions teeing off. Instead, everything's more condensed. You have chip block help. You have tight ends and fullbacks. There's a litany of other factors that really help your protection. We're talking about good systematic football. And when you have good defense and you can command the flow of the game, you can play this way. And that's what the Bengals are doing right now.
And I think this is a good opportunity, too, to move on to the next most relevant topic of the week. And that's Dennis Allen getting fired after four games by the Oakland Raiders.
And it is after four games. I had a lot of Raider fans.
A road game, too.
Yeah. And 2 weeks ago, they went on the road and gave New England the fight of their life, and everybody was tipping their cap to the Raiders. And then they go to London, which is not an easy trip from the – and I'm not making excuses for them, but we're talking about a West Coast team going all the way to London, and they didn't show up. And so now Dennis Allen is canned, and in my mind, he's four games into his tenure because I know he inherited an 8-8 team, but when they picked up the Raiders and he and Reggie McKenzie came in back in, 2012 – it was well known that this was going to be at least a 2-year rebuilding project in terms of laying the foundation. They had a salary cap problem like no team had ever seen.
And they haven't had a lot of picks.
They didn't have draft picks either. So they had no draft picks, salary cap issues, and everybody knew that it was going to take 2 years just for them to have a chance to be competitive. While they went through those 2 years, they went 4-12 in each of them, not good. And now here they are in the first year post-salary cap hell era. And they're four games in, and they make a coaching change.
Well, and how much better could anyone else have done in
no,
Oakland?
Not
I mean, there's
better.
Nothing there.
No. Yeah, Dennis Allen was not the problem in Oakland. I mean, it's we've seen this before. I can tell you with certainty that this Raiders coaching staff went into this season knowing that this could happen. And the idea, knowing that we could be losing our jobs, we could be training our guys, developing our young players for the next staff – that impacts the way a coaching staff works and operates, and it impacted their day-to-day decision-making. You really think this coaching staff, and I, let's just be logical for a minute. Why would they choose Terrell Pryor as their quarterback
when he
can't throw and he doesn't understand football? And I don't mean to be mean to the guy, but he's not a quarterback. He's not an NFL. And so there's pressure from other sources that was coming there and impacting them. And Dennis Allen, the point I'm getting at, never was able to even do his job with full freedom, and now he gets fired once they're in their post hell era.
Well, now every coaching staff that goes into Oakland is going to have that hanging over your head that you really don't have any security to build your team.
Right, and the only solace is that was going to be the case anyway. Right, I mean that's been the case for 10 years. Maybe that's not solace. Maybe that makes it all worse. I don't know.
So is this just a give up year now? Is that what the front office thinks?
I don't know what they think. I don't know what this is. I don't understand Oakland's end game here. Not one bit.
Well, it's hard to understand what Oakland's doing. It's hard to understand what we have in the Dallas Cowboys, too. They're hosting.
Well, from what I hear,
Houston,
John, they're the greatest team in the NFL now.
You know, that's what I don't get, is they go from no one knows what they are to jumping into top tens of the power rankings.
Which I guess you have to. You're 3-1. You win on national TV. That's going to happen.
It just doesn't make sense, because does everyone think that all the problems in Dallas are fixed because they beat up a bad Saints team?
Not
a great Saints team right now.
We're going to have to discuss that. I mean, really? No.
Well, the defense isn't doing anything for the Saints.
Yeah, I get you. I mean, we'll come back to the Saints. I get what you're saying. I think the Saints are a better team, but they've beaten up on the Titans, who are not a very good team, and they beat up on the Rams, who were adjusting to a new quarterback and kind of learning what they're doing on defense still. It's early in the season. But what we know is that the Cowboys, I think why people are excited is everything that's been wrong with the Cowboys historically in recent years now seems right.
Offensive line,
consistency of the running game, and that defense, you have to admit, and this is why I don't think you can say that beat up on a bad Saints team, that defense also just held the New Orleans Saints to 17 points, and that's a no-name defense. We thought that defense, and I was in that boat, and I'm glad I was, because it was smart football to think that defense was going to be bad, because you look at their personnel and the type of scheme they wanted to run, they didn't have the pieces to make it work, and yet here they are making it work.
Well, I think that's what we thought about the Cowboys, though, going into the season before the kind of shaky start, was that the offense was going to score a lot of points and that the defense would be, well, I guess a lot worse than we thought.
But I think they're doing it through defense. I think they're very similar. As you even said, I think they're similar to Cincinnati, because their quarterback's been kind of a complimentary player. Their passing game has come out of more running concepts because they've become a running team this year. I hope DeMarco Murray stays healthy, because that's looking like a really good thing, and that offensive line that's the best offensive line in football, I think. So. Mm-hmm. They have the right formula, and it's a different formula than we've seen before.
Well, they looked bad week one versus the Niners, but since then...
Yeah, but Romo wasn't healthy either.
Exactly, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Since then, it's been good, and they haven't tried to break the mold of what makes them good. They've just rode DeMarco Murray to 3 straight wins.
So let's ask this, and they have a game coming up against Seattle after this. They play Houston this week, though, and that's...
Seattle on the road, that'll be
interesting. Yeah, we'll talk about that when we get to it, but they're at Houston right now. They're also in a stretch. I'm looking at their schedule here. This is astounding. They're in a stretch where they have 5 out of 6 at home.
Yeah.
And this is their second one. So they've got – and then they go
– and then on the road at Jacksonville isn't exactly a showstopper.
That's in London. So that'll be actually essentially at home too, because they're going to have the home field advantage in terms of crowd noise there.
Sure.
That's an incredible schedule. I don't know how they scored that. Anyway, I think this will be a revealing week for them to some degree, because they're, and I know the Seattle week probably will as well, but they're going to be playing two good defenses in a row here, because Houston has an excellent defense, and I am on board. It's only 1/4 of the way through, but I'm on board for J.J. Watt as the MVP at the quarter point.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, he impacts the game like a quarterback does, where he has a noticeable difference on whether it's a good play or a bad play on the majority of, or close to a majority of the snaps, 45% of the snaps, I'd say, he impacts in a unique fashion.
Well, and if Houston can force Dallas to get away from the run, too, this can be a very favorable game for the Texans.
Yes, it can. Or at least that's what the Texans are going to have to do to make it favorable. I mean, the Texans don't have a great offense themselves, and they're going to have to get their running game going. And they had a great running attack in the first 2 weeks, and then Arian Foster got hurt, and it hasn't been a whole lot since. So they have to get that on track. But I'll be interested to see how their run defense performs against this zone-running Cowboys offense, which can also actually dominate with man-blocking concepts. That's a really good line in Dallas. And J.J. Watt's going to be better than any offensive lineman they can throw at him, and the Texans have been moving him around a lot more this year. So he's where he used to actually be almost a setup man, where he played strong side defensive end almost every snap and drew double teams. Now he's getting some snaps at weak side defensive end, outside DN, three technique, even some nose shade snaps here and there. Their Romeo Crennel is different than Wade Phillips in that sense. And so I'll be curious to see how they employ him against the Cowboys and what the Cowboys do about it. If they run at him anyway, or if they have some check with me stuff at the line of scrimmage for their rushing attack, which that'd be putting stuff on Romo's plate. This will be a good game to watch.
And the Texans are tied for the most takeaways in the NFL too with 9. So Dallas is coming off a game with no turnovers, which turnovers cripple a team and have crippled the Cowboys in the past. They had a great game offensively against the Saints. Now, going against Houston, this will be a good judge of what the real character of that offense is.
It will, and that turnover thing's interesting. Remember, we talked to Kareem Jackson on the show last week, and he said the biggest difference, or one of them, with Crennel's system and Wade Phillips, and they're both 3-4s, but they're different types of 3-4s. The biggest difference is more zone coverage this year. And as he said, that keeps eyes on the football. So it gives you more chances to make plays. And then also, if we go back to J.J. Watt, he's factored in on a few good. That interception he had against Buffalo, that touchdown return, they did a great thing with their linebackers to threaten the gaps before the snap in a way that made the right tackle leave Watt unblocked. And it's those kind of little wrinkles where you make a team effort building around your best guy. Watt was supposed to be blocked on that play, and he wasn't because of the right tackle got confused because of the fake pre-snap looks they gave him.
On the defensive side of the ball, real quick with the Cowboys, have you noticed Tyrone Crawford, the second-year guy, he's been used a lot more in lieu of some injuries there on the line. Do you see him staying, kind of cementing a role for himself? Have you noticed him on film performing well?
He hasn't jumped out at me. I know watching the game Sunday night, and Chris Collinsworth was talking about how the Cowboys are very high on him as a three technique. I could see that sticking just because they don't have a lot of other guys to put there. I mean, what are they going to do? I guess they have Henry Melton, but he's been working back in slowly, and he's only shown glimpses and hints of his old form and not the every down dominant guy he was as a Bear. So I see him certainly being part of a rotation there.
We want to remind you, we will get to an interview Andy did with Owen Daniels, tight end for the Ravens, just in a little bit. So let's just segue directly into the Ravens, who have a game this week with the Colts. Great offense versus the Ravens, who look like
great
one
defense.
Of the more well-rounded teams in the league right now.
I think that's a great defense waiting to happen. I really do. It's every week, and they just put a hurting on Carolina.
Had three big wins in a row, too. These weren't just slack wins. Pittsburgh, Cleveland, and Carolina. That's a good stretch for this team that's now starting to cement themselves in the AFC North when they were kind of an afterthought when you keep going to the Bengals.
Some of us picked them to win the AFC North.
Did you?
Yeah. I didn't even think about it for a second. I thought, and I still think this is clearly the best team in the AFC North. Once they get it all together, I thought it might take them a little longer, but they're 2-1 in the division. They've won 3 in a row. And you talked about that defense up against Andrew Luck and the Colts offense. That Colts offense had a showing against Tennessee. It was clinical what they did. And they did a lot of stuff out of 2x2 and 3x1 sets against two high safeties for the Titans. And why that's important is because I think they're going to see a lot of that this year, because this Colts running game might be the worst in the league. And there's no reason to bring a safety down in the box to tackle Trent Richardson, because someone's already getting him 2 or 3 yards behind the line of scrimmage anyway. So I think the more the Colts can do against two high safety looks, the better. And the Ravens, as good as they've been at times this year, they still have some questions in the secondary. With Ladarius Webb's been hurt. They're looking for answers because they just put Matt Elam, their safety, at nickel slot last week. and he got burned a time or two against Carolina, and that was really the only negative from that game. The rest of the Ravens' performance was outstanding, and that's the kind of negative that could translate and carry over. The Colts of all teams and luck of all quarterbacks know how to tactically and then execution-wise beat you with those kind of flaws you show.
Well, you've mentioned the Ravens' defense, but I think this is going to be more about, can the Colts limit the Ravens' offense enough to give Andrew Luck those opportunities? Because we've seen a very good running game out of Baltimore that not a lot of people necessarily are expected with Ray Rice being gone and Bernard Pierce being hurt in the beginning of the year. And, you know, it seems a lot better in Baltimore than a lot of people thought it would be.
Yeah, it has been, and there's been a few reasons. And that, in fact, we'll play the Daniels interview now because that's the first thing I asked him about. But one of what's really stood out to me, and I'll let him tell the rest, but what's really stood out is the play of the offensive line, especially inside with Marshall Yanda at right guard. He's been the best guard in the NFL this year. And Osemele at left guard is also very athletic. And they've gotten good mileage out of those guys. Plus, this second-year fullback that they have has been excellent for them as well.
So let's just get to that Owen Daniels interview right now. We'll play it. Andy with Owen Daniels earlier this week.
Talking with veteran tight end, longtime Texan, now current Baltimore Raven, Owen Daniels. Owen, Dennis Pitt is out. You're the guy now at tight end, coming off a nice victory this week. And what I want to start with is the running game and what you guys have done. I think so much focus has been on the changes in the backfield personnel, and lost in all the focus there is the fact that collectively your team and your offense is running the ball extremely well. Can you talk about what you're seeing from the blocking, from the play structures on film when you guys study yourselves?
Yeah, well, it's the Planet Coach Kubiak's offense. That's always a big part of what we want to do. We want to stay committed to the run, and we want to do it well. I think the guys up front have really adjusted well and learned, you know, this zone scheme. And from my perspective, they seem to get better and better every week with communication and being on the right guys and just getting the feel for it. Guys up front and all the guys we have running the football. So, Lorenzo and Justin have been doing a heck of a job, along with Bernard Pierce. It's been fun to watch.
Talk to share, teach our listeners something here. I'm watching the Panthers film and other film this season with you guys, but especially the Panthers film. You do a lot of pre-snap shifting, and it's not just in the running game; it's in all kinds of play design. Obviously, there's no cookie-cutter answer for this, but can you teach our listeners two or three bullet points of what goes into the pre-snap shifts, what you're trying to set up, what the defense tells you when you do your shift motion, all of that stuff?
Yeah, I guess it depends on the play we're running. You know, sometimes we motion to figure out, you know, what coverage they're playing, if it's man or zone coverage. Sometimes we motion just to get guys moving and, you know, kind of have, you know, their eyes in different places, just to really have the defense think about one more extra thing out there. The more they got to think about, you know, the less they can really prepare for.
Talk about the 3x2 empty sets that you run. You did it a lot in week one against Cincinnati, got away from it a little bit the next 2 weeks, but you go back to it when it's in hurry-up situations. Why are you guys comfortable out of those spread sets, and what do you like about them, and what are the challenges that they present for you guys?
Yeah, we were probably hitting it a little bit more than we wanted to be week one, just because we were down, and we got into it just to kind of get the up-tempo offense going and get back into the game. We typically do it just to change up a tempo, kind of keep the defense on their heels, or if it's a two-minute situation where we need to go up-tempo, we run that. We work on it a lot in practice, and you know, we've got so much depth here in this offense as far as, you know, receivers, you know, tight ends, and running backs that we can put a lot of people out there. We can sub guys in and out and keep guys fresh, and that's hard for defense to defend.
You mentioned that the guys are picking up Kubiak's scheme and the run blocking and stuff. It's a little bit of a different, or maybe you speak to this, to talk about the differences with the scheme now that you're in Baltimore versus when you were running it in Houston. What are some of the hidden differences or differences in preparation that fans might not see?
Well, we're doing the exact same stuff, to be quite honest. I'm not exactly sure, you know, what they're doing as far as the run scheme here last year since I wasn't here. But, you know, Coach Kubiak has brought his offense, the identical offense that we run in Houston. You know, we'll add things week to week depending on who we're playing, obviously, depending on the game plan. But, you know, when you've run one scheme, and then you move to a zone scheme, it's a little bit of an adjusting period to get used to, especially for the guys up front. Their assignments are a little bit different. So, you know, sometimes it might not make sense to them right off the bat, and it might be a little bit confusing, but, you know, we had all the OTAs and training camp to get all that cleared up, and, you know, you've seen with our running game, it's been clicking, and it's been running a lot more smoother as far as communication up front and you know, who we're IDing and who we're going to. So, you got to give those guys a lot of credit for that.
I get the sense in the passing game, there at least for what I was expecting, there's been fewer rollouts and moving pockets and bootlegs with the passing game. Certainly there's been some, but it hasn't felt like the staple that it was in Houston. Have you noticed that, and what do you think's behind that?
Well, it depends, you know, the type of defense a team plays really kind of dictates if we're going to do more of that or less of that, you know, in each game plan that we have. So, you know, some teams, you know, play ends up the field and some teams have ends crashing and we, you know, we adjust our game plan accordingly. And I think a lot of teams do that, you know. You don't want to be, you know, booting into a guy that's playing up the field in your quarterback's face. So, you know, those coaches do a great job putting game plans together and calling those plays at the right time. So, obviously, we've got the right guy at quarterback to do it. He's very mobile. He's got a strong arm, a really, really athletic guy. So, you know, we'll do what we need to.
I'll get you out of here on this question. You mentioned the strong arm guy you have at quarterback. What has surprised you most about Joe Flacco? What do you like about playing with him?
Oh, man. That's a good question. I like his demeanor, honestly. You know, obviously, he's got all the attributes as far as being a big guy, an athletic guy, and a super strong arm. And he's obviously really smart, but just the way he handles himself in practice, he's fun to be around, and he doesn't take himself too seriously. And you know, so he keeps things light enough, you know, during practice, during the week, and on game day. And that's what you kind of want. You know, you don't want a guy too high or too low when it comes to, you know, being emotional at the quarterback position. So he keeps a pretty even keel and keeps things pretty, you know, in perspective when we're playing out there.
And good stuff there from Owen Daniels, Andy.
Yeah, and he, you know, I want to elaborate a little bit on the thing about the rollouts, and he made it, that was really interesting. I thanked him later actually for bringing up the defensive ends, because that's an element even I forget to think about. And I'm sure it's easy to forget to think about, is how much the rollout game is contingent on what the opposing defensive ends do. Now, the part that he didn't say, and I don't blame him, and I don't know if he feels this way, but I would almost guarantee you what's going on is Gary Kubiak's also calling fewer rollouts because he has a quarterback that can make all the throws now. And before, with Matt Schaub, you had to give Schaub ample space to throw and room to step into his throw. And you had to, it didn't hurt to slice his field in half to give him more pointed direction of where to throw. He could unleash the ball with more confidence. Flacco, there's none of that issue. And so you can have him drop back, the whole field's in play. He's got maybe the best pure cannon in the league, and I think we're seeing a different tactical approach from Kubiak, a less limited one, just because now he's got a big-time quarterback. And, of course, again, Daniels isn't going to say that because Schaub was his guy, and he had some success with Schaub, but he's got to love playing with Joe Flacco.
Have you noticed a bit of a more comfortable Joe Flacco this year?
And what, like, just...
He just seems a lot more composed in the pocket. It's
maybe a little
that
bit.
That offense seems, and it could have a lot to do with Kubiak, is it just seems so much more fluid because last year just nothing ever seemed completely right.
Yeah, they did seem very choppy last year. And I'll tell you this, Flacco has made some spectacular throws with bodies collapsing in on him. And he really hangs in there. And that gets back to arm strength as well.
Andy, we've had 2 weeks to think about the Denver Broncos and Arizona Cardinals. Now both of them had a bye. Now they're meeting. Arizona Cardinals, one of the two unbeaten teams. Obviously, we mentioned them with Cincinnati. And
how come
and
we're not
Broncos.
Hearing the whole can the Cardinals go undefeated thing? Isn't that what we're supposed to do?
I think
with
that's kind of hard to believe with Drew Stanton or Carson Palmer's bum shoulder.
Yeah, and this will probably be the week that it ends, I would imagine. Although,
Well, apparently Palmer saw a specialist this week. He was supposed to be back and ready to play, but I would guess that Drew Stanton's going to be the guy this Sunday.
They've been able to manufacture offense with him or Palmer at the helm, and so I don't want to say it's not a problem, but I think they'll be fine. What's going to be interesting to me is the other side of the ball and the stuff Todd Bowles does. He is such a pressure-oriented defensive coach, and as I wrote this week in the MMQB column, that the pressure comes up the A-gaps. He's really good with inside pressure. I'm eager to see how much of that he employs against Peyton Manning, because most defensive coaches don't like to pressure Manning.
The Broncos clearly have a lot of offensive weapons. Demaryius Thomas is off to a little bit of a slower start than I think we thought he might have. Do you see anything to read into why Thomas might be utilized less? Is it an
arm strength? I don't think he's being used less. I think he's just not playing quite as well. I think maybe there's questions about confidence there. He certainly has had a few drops. He's had some bad routes. He just hasn't quite played well, but I don't think it's much to worry about. In fact, it'll be fun to see how he does coming off a bye, because he probably had some time to sharpen some things, and he's in a good offense, and he's improved as a route runner every year in his career. And to me, that's really reassuring about a guy's long-term success or potential as a star.
But he's frequently used in those deep routes and often draws the best cornerback on whatever defense he faces. And then, Peyton Manning is one of those guys that's get it out. When you see that first option open, if it's a good option, he's going to get it out quick.
Well, they like him as the X-ISO option, so he's on the weak side of the formation, which is kind of what you're talking about. I think the arrival of Emmanuel Sanders, though, alleviates some of the pressure off of that.
I think Sanders already has something like 29 receptions, 28 receptions, something like that, which is double what Demaryius Thomas.
He's had big numbers, and he's their fastest guy and their quickest guy, and so you can leverage Thomas's attention in ways that get Sanders matched up and free. We saw that in the Seattle game quite a bit, actually. We'll see it this week. It'll be a little – well, they'll be able to do it. The Cardinals play a lot of man-to-man coverage, and so it's going to be a little bit different because you're not manipulating zone coverages with your route concepts. So it'll be more about Manning choosing the matchup that he likes.
Well, and these great route-running quick receivers are important to every team, and that's what the Giants have obviously found in Victor Cruz, and it's going to be a difficult matchup for the Falcons, which have a defense that – it hasn't really been able to stop anybody so far. It's coming off a rough loss to the Vikings.
The Giants found that in Victor Cruz, and hopefully they'll have another one in Odell Beckham soon.
Yeah.
And that Giants offense has clicked the last 2 weeks, which is another reason, obviously, we get too caught up in what happens the first 2 weeks of the season. And I think what happened with the Giants, because let's ask, how can they go from being, frankly, just awful to excellent in the course of 10 days, something like that? I think what it was, they had so many issues with communication pre-snap. Well, that's correctable. And once you get on the same page, once you start speaking the same language, I think you can really start rolling because everything else was working. It was almost like a false negative with them.
Well, and I think the Giants have been pleasantly surprised in a lot of different areas of their game, especially the offensive line has gotten great push, giving Jennings plenty of room to run. And then using that play action like they love to do with Eli Manning opens up the field immensely for them, especially with the emergence of Larry Donnell, who was incredible for them against the Redskins.
Yeah, and he had three touchdowns from three different formation alignments against three different defenders. So that's symptomatic of his versatility. What you got something to say?
Did you hear about the story that Larry Donnell sat himself on his fantasy team before he scored three touchdowns?
I read it right before we went on.
That has to be the most frustrating thing. If he actually cares about fantasy, he probably doesn't. But
well, I would say he does. If he's actually willing to sit
himself,
and then he's willing to sit himself, then that's a guy that's.
That's some confidence. I think you like that confidence, drafting yourself.
But then sitting yourself?
Well, maybe that's
that's Demaryius Thomas type confidence. So then, that's going back and forth.
Looking back at this game, the Falcons have to figure out some things in their secondary and containing this Giants team that offensively exploded last week isn't going to be easy. And is there really a solution for the Falcons on defense that haven't been able to really stop the run and haven't been able to playing coverage very well either?
Well, you're describing bad defense, in other words.
Yeah, all around.
I don't know, because they want to be a defense that dictates the terms of engagement. Mike Nolan's
Every defense want
no,
that?
No, not necessarily. Not necessarily. Like a Tampa Bay, for example, wants to be reactionary and play straight up coverage, and so does Chicago. But the Falcons really do. They really want to be a dictate the terms. And so they're going to rotate coverages, do disguises, send different pressure looks. But I don't know. You can't get into that. For one, it's hard to get into that against teams like the Giants that get the ball out so quickly. But for two, it's hard to get into that if you're not forced in third down situations. If teams are able to run the ball down your throat, then you're not dictating the terms of engagement. And the Giants have been running the ball down teams' throats lately.
Well, and the Falcons need their offense to score a lot of points to beat teams anymore. And the Giants' secondary has looked a lot better, too. If you just a quick point on what you've seen from the Giants' defense being a little more than – it seems like everyone's doing a little better than we expected. But the Giants, specifically on defense, have been able to keep up with teams and hold people in a lot of man coverage situations.
Yeah, I think they've gotten what they want out of Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie. They've gotten what they paid for. And Prince Amukamara gets better not every week, but certainly every month of his career.
And that's noticeable, too. You can tell that without looking at film.
Yeah, he plays with more of a presence, and he has a good understanding of angles and how they relate to routes and where the ball is in the air. He's a natural cornerbacking mindset for zone stuff.
Well, and the 49ers are also looking for some identity in their secondary, trying to find some situations where they can take advantage of man coverage, but it hasn't always worked. They did limit Philadelphia last week, got that big win at home that we and a lot of people were starting to call a bit of a must-win for the 49ers.
No, wait a minute. Let's not put us – were you doing that? Because we're smarter. We're smarter than
not
that.
Not a must-win as in Harbaugh's gone, but a must-win as in the kind of mindset of the locker room. I mean, that if they would have lost at home, I think even you look at the 49ers a lot differently.
Well, okay, yeah. I mean, if they lose versus
Well, that's what I'm saying, is that this was a good step in the right direction for them, and now they're hosting Kansas City, who's off a big win themselves.
Yeah, and this – look, the Eagles game, that was a tail-whooping. I mean, yeah. It really was. The Eagles had all their points off special teams and
they
defense.
Weren't able to get anything out of LeSean McCoy.
And that's the second week in a row for them. And so San Francisco, how do they translate that or carry that over? Because we talked about the misdirection concepts that the Chiefs do, and those can be hard to defend. But the Eagles are similar in that style offensively. They're not quite as much and not in the same way as the Chiefs, but conceptually – they want to get you going one way and throw the ball the other way. And the Niners were able to take that away. And they had an excellent feel for Philadelphia's concepts and route combinations as it pertained to the Niners' zone matchup stuff. And I expect that'll be the case again against San Francisco. Not to mention, this team knows Alex Smith extremely well. And they know what he doesn't like to see as a quarterback. And they're gonna show him what he doesn't like to see.
What have you thought so far of Michael Wilhoit kind of being in a fill-in role this year?
He's played almost every snap, so they obviously like him. I know they were comfortable with him in a lot of man coverage alignments, and so they'll put him on running backs and tight ends. There really has not been a matchup that they've been uncomfortable playing Wilhoit in, so that's been a real pleasant surprise. I still think this team's long-term future is at least long-term in the course of this season. I think at some point they're going to get something out of a dime package. Unless Navarro Bowman comes back and is absolutely dynamite somehow, I still think it's going to come down to what they can do with their safeties in dime situations. And one of their safeties, Antoine Bethea, I think he just won defensive.
Player of the week.
Yeah, did he? And he just had he was outstanding.
And
just
he forced a fumble. And
well, you get those defensive player awards by the stats, and they won't give it to the same guy 2 weeks in a row usually. So those are a little bit of everybody gets a trophy kind of thing. But it was he even when it doesn't show up in the stat books, can be terrific because he understands the running game and he fills, they call it run the alley. I've heard that term a lot with him this week. He runs the alley, gets downhill against the run extremely well. And I've always thought he's one of the smartest pass defenders in the league, at least between the numbers where he's in open space.
Last week we saw the Niners offense be able to get a little bit back on their formula with Frank Gore. Getting back to Frank Gore, we talked about last week that was important for them to beat the Eagles, getting Gore the ball, and he had over 100 yards last week. And how important is it for the Niners to be able to manufacture moving the ball with Gore instead of putting so much pressure on Kaepernick like we saw in the loss to the Cardinals?
Well, I think they're they're a more comfortable team when Frank Gore and the running game are the focal point. And that's because Kaepernick, talented as he is, we talk about this every week, it feels like, he's really meant to be a complementary type quarterback. He's not a drop back and multi-progression, read the whole field type QB, and he's not going to command things at the line of scrimmage. He's a playmaker, and you need to put him in a position to make plays. And making plays is not dropping back and making progression reads. That's making the offense work. The offense has to help Kaepernick be what he, you know, what he is instinctively. And I think when you're running the football, that's where you put Kaepernick in those types of situations most.
Andy, we got a nice 1-3 matchup in the NFC South next. Tampa Bay on the road versus the Saints. What do you think?
Well, a bad Saints team. I guess that's what we heard earlier.
Well, the bad defensively. I don't think I'm surprising anybody by saying that outside of you. I mean, the offense looks Saints offense. Jimmy Graham hasn't looked like he has in the past.
Well, the numbers are there.
A couple of drops, though. I can't pinpoint the play, but I think there was third and 12 or something. Big drop.
Look, I'm not down on the Saints defense the way everybody else is. I look at what they have going, and I see good individual pieces that just aren't quite clicking as a puzzle yet. But let's start. I mentioned Curtis Lofton on the show a few weeks ago, and I guess Pro Football Focus has him ranked kind of low, and so people are thinking I'm an idiot by saying he's been maybe, in my opinion, the second-best inside linebacker in the league. I stand by that. I think the guy has flashed. I think he has wild talent, and he's explosive to the ball, especially in a 3-4 where it's pinning his ears back and going. Up front, Akeem Hicks has been a good run defender for them. They don't have quite the pass rush they want, but Junior Gallette's having his best year.
He wasn't
year.
Great last week, though.
Well, he went up against Tyron Smith, a very good left tackle. Yeah, but
who clamps down on everything he sees.
Gallette's having they're getting more. I bet you they didn't expect that they would get this much out of Gallette, just from edge rushing standpoint. But look, to be fair, yes, they are trying to manufacture a pass rush. It's not like Gallette's Dwight Freeney from 5 years ago and that this is a monster of a pass rush. But the point I'm getting at is the pieces they've had are the same as last year. And I think watching them just each in a vacuum, they're all having very good years. They're just, for whatever reason, there's been an inconsistency. It's not working. Even on the back end, Keenan Lewis is having his best season as a man-to-man defender. And I think Jairus Byrd's been fine for them in center field. Not great, but fine.
I think a lot of people like to point to that missed tackle against DeMarco Murray.
And he had a bad angle and all that. Yeah, okay.
That's going to happen against DeMarco Murray, too.
And there are bad plays. Like I'm saying, he's been fine. He hasn't been amazing.
He's dazzled, right.
But you can see the range. You can see the awareness and coverage. You understand why they signed him. I just wouldn't go selling these Saints team short. Now, you know what? Having said that, in the AFC South, I still feel good about my Buccaneers pick. I think the Bucs are the better team.
Even without Mike
haul.
Evans for a couple of weeks?
Yeah, I need to watch the offense a little closer. I've seen the defense on the film. I haven't
Avante
seen the
David has
the
looked
film.
Good.
Yeah, he did look good against the Steelers. He looks good every week. And I'll tell you, with Gerald McCoy back on the field,
that's big.
And Michael Johnson came to life finally, those three guys, that might be the most athletic trio of any front seven in the league, man for man. And when you put them on the field together, and eventually they'll have Deshaun Goldson back as well, and it's going to really amplify this. There's a lot of collective speed on that defense. It's a fast, athletic unit. I'm telling you, Tampa Bay, they're one game out of first place in the NFC South. I mean, it's not like they had an ugly week three loss. They started 0-3. Look, everybody's 2-2 or worse in that division. So I feel good about the Bucs. Now, I don't know if they'll win this week because I think the Saints and the Bucs are right there neck and neck. Where is this game being played?
This is in New Orleans.
Yeah, see, that's why. So I'm not super sold on it, but what I'm getting at is, okay, if we're going to talk bad about all these NFC South teams, then what are we worrying about? Who's going to be good? Who's going to be good and separate themselves to make these bad teams pay for it?
Did you notice a little bit more Mike Glennon praise than you expected after that fourth quarter, the game-winning drive against Pittsburgh? Because he completed half of his passes during that game, and now it's the Mike Glennon era is here. We don't need Josh McCown.
Oh, John, I really wish I'd seen it. I tried to see the film right before I got in. I'm going to have to watch it.
We're going to have to do this later in the night.
I know it. And I try to get as much in before the. I don't want to sit here and BS
sooner or
people,
later,
though.
This will be live because you'll just be watching.
Yeah, we'll do it live on Saturday afternoons or something. I don't want to BS people, though. I haven't seen Mike Glennon on film. My suspicion, though, on that play against with Lewis Murphy to set up the game-winning touchdown. What looking on that on TV, it was too high coverage. Murphy came out of on the trips side, so three receivers. And it looked to me like the perfect route combination against that coverage. And it was a called play. So take what you want from that. I don't know if it was great instincts. I wouldn't call it that. I don't think anyone went out and made a play. I think they had the perfect play call on, and they got what they wanted and took advantage of it. I need to see the film.
I know you didn't watch the film, but on that next play then, that touchdown pass, the Steelers' coverage just looks confused frequently anymore. And
they're without their guy. What? They're without their top cornerback, their veteran cornerback.
Well,
Ike
but
Taylor.
You got to make something happen. You know,
what does that mean? It makes something happen.
Well, I don't know, because Pittsburgh's offense looks like it can do about whatever it wants, but then the defense seems to let that team down every time they're on the field,
or at least every time where things start to really get rolling. Would you agree with that? Because that defense was ranked number one a few years ago, and they went 8-8 or something like that. So I know what you're saying, though. Let's put it this way. It's been a while since the Steelers' offense and defense have both played up to their potential at the same time.
What have you noticed from Antonio Brown so far this season? He's played
top five, really well. Top five receiver, easily.
And with Le'Veon Bell
and that's
and
with
Antonio
the drops,
Brown
too.
There.
He had a bad drop that you could argue cost him the game last week, and I still think he's top five.
This looks like one of the better Pittsburgh offenses, though, in a few years.
They have two guys that can really create for their own. And that's Brown is one of them, and Le'Veon Bell is the other one.
We're looking this week for the Eagles to get back on track. They're hosting the St. Louis Rams, and now you finally get your opportunity to talk about Austin Davis,
who was named the starter. Did I tell you that? I'm sure I told you.
I think you predicted that.
It was not hard to predict because the offense is better with him. He's been fine. He's good, and he brings a little bit to the table versus Sean Hill, a guy you break even with. So, yeah, I like Austin Davis and
completing 72% of his passes, man.
And they're not just like little dink and dunk type passes. I mean, he's playing within the confines of the offense. He takes what the defense gives him. He is one of those, but he's taking it in a healthy way.
Rams defense hasn't been good so far. We haven't. I mean, obviously, Chris Long's a big loss for them on the line, but they haven't been getting much pressure.
Robert Quinn hasn't quite flashed as much as he did last year. Which it's going to be hard for anybody to do that because he had an unbelievable season. But Aaron Donald looks good to me, and I think he's a little better than Brockers, and I think Brockers is certainly an above average player. Man for man, even without Chris Long, this is still the most athletic defensive line in the NFL, and I think this can be a tough matchup for the Eagles for that reason. Philadelphia's offensive line is withered by injuries right now.
All they have is Peters there left over from
they do get Lane Johnson back at right tackle, suspension. And that's a big boost because they need that athletic upgrade. This offense is built big time on athleticism, and it sets up their screen game. It sets up their space-oriented rushing attack. Having the offensive line be athletic and guys that can get out in front or change directions as run blockers, that's huge to what Chip Kelly does. And when you take that element away, I mean, you don't need me to tell you. Look at LeSean McCoy's production. It's fallen off the face of the earth since these injuries took place up front. And that's going to continue to happen. McCoy's going to have to become more disciplined behind a bad offensive line. I know that sounds weird, but he can't play – he can't be this bounce it outside every single snap type runner if he doesn't have the lineman that can support that. He's going to have to start taking his 3 and 4 yard runs. That's the only way they're going to get on track.
Well, the Eagles often roll over teams because they do spread things out and they do have athleticism at the wide receiver position. The Rams, who will have to try to keep up with that in their secondary, E.J. Gaines has been kind of a bright spot for them at corner, hasn't he so far?
To be honest, I haven't noticed him, which maybe that means he's a bright spot.
He hasn't stood out to you yet.
Right, and sometimes there's certain positions where that's not a bad thing. Cornerback and any of the offensive line positions. If you don't – I take notes throughout the season on every single game, and then I go back and review them in the offseason. And if I don't see a lineman's name, I need to remind myself, hey, that could be a good thing. And it's a little bit true with a cornerback. Now, not always true. Janoris Jenkins has stood out a little bit to me. It's not an easy scheme to play in, though. With these, you have a young secondary. I mean, E.J. Gaines, he's a 6th-round rookie.
Yeah.
And Janoris Jenkins is in his third season, but he came in very immature and very
McDonald's
raw.
McDonald's a 2-year guy.
Yep, McDonald, their safety's in his second year. And McLeod's in his third year, their other safety. So it's a young secondary. And then LaMarcus Joyner, their nickelback's a second-round rookie. I mean, we're talking about guys that are still very, I guess, what, short in the tooth? Is that, can we say that?
Yeah.
Greg Williams throws a lot on your plate as a defense. And I had concerns about how this age factor would work for the Rams coming in. And I think overall they've done okay with it, but it's a secondary that ought to improve as the year goes on, just because it's gonna get easier for them. It has to, because I think it's hard for them now.
There's been some secondary issues with the Cleveland Browns, too. Joe Hayden hasn't looked exactly like himself. They're on the road this week. Tennessee Titans looking for a bit of a breather after what Andrew Luck laid on them last week. You mentioned, I think I read one of your tweets, that Andrew Luck's first half against the Titans was pretty damn close to flawless.
Yeah, and the only thing that made it not flawless was he had two horrendous plays, and they both should have been interceptions. Only one of them turned out to be, because Pollard dropped a pick. But the rest of it was flawless, yeah. And Tennessee did not play bad. In fact, they were very good against the run, and I thought their corners looked okay in man coverage. I think they'll draft a corner this year. I know it's way too early to talk about that, but I think – for what Ray Horton wants to do, they don't quite look like a Ray Horton defense to me yet. There's a little bit of, they do an out of their dime package, which they play a lot, but there's on the first and second down, there's a little bit more vanilla element than you want, which isn't, again, that's not atypical at all for a defense. But I think Ray Horton has more he wants to do, and he might not know what he has at cornerback yet.
What do we really think of the Browns so far? They seem like the team that's just been so close all year so far that it's like you kind of want to believe in them, because, I mean, how often do you get to celebrate in Cleveland? But I just don't know what to think so far, because they lost a close one with the Ravens, and Brian Hoyer has looked good enough to win. I mean, it hasn't happened yet, but where are they going to have to go to manufacture some offense and actually get in the win column again?
I think they have been manufacturing offense pretty well. And the reason they're the way you say they are, John, and I agree with you, is they run the ball okay, and then they, against Baltimore in their last game, they took advantage of their deep shot opportunities, which were specific play calls. In other words, we're gonna take our deep shot now. They're not just lining up and then going through a bunch of reads and here comes a big play. They're calculated approaches, which you have to do when you have a lack of big-time resources. So I think the Browns are getting, for the most part, they're getting as much as they can out of what they have. And unfortunately, that's left them at 1-2. Now, a very respectable 1-2. All of their games have been decided by 3 points or less.
And that's the interesting thing about the Browns, is that they utilize very little talent in the skill positions, while a team like the Bears, which we'll talk about next, they're on the road against the Panthers this week. Bears have a lot of weapons, okay? Alshon Jeffrey, I mean, we talk about this every week. What's kind of missing so far from the Bears? I mean, it seems like they should be so good offensively, and the defense has some issues.
Well, yeah, the defense does have issues. They ran into a white-hot Packers offense, and the Packers offense got white-hot week. It's not like they came in white-hot, but the Bears do. When you can't generate a pass rush with a four-man rush, then you're going to have trouble being the type of vanilla-based, zone-based defense that the Bears want to be. That's on that side of the ball. The other side of the ball, we've seen the Carolina defense, we've seen them get run over 2 weeks in a row now. Baltimore really ran the ball on them at will. I don't know what the numbers say, but the film revealed the Ravens.
Pittsburgh did the same thing.
Yeah, Pittsburgh killed them with the run. And it wasn't horrible, because they had some big runs, but it was enough. They did kill them with the run, because that's what decided the game, is Pittsburgh was able to control the terms of engagement up front. If Carolina can't win against the run on defense, then that team's not going to win, period. And now they're going up against the Bears team that had over 230 yards rushing last week.
Jay Cutler's already starting to kind of rack up the interceptions earlier on this season. Did you watch the tape from that game?
Watched the game itself.
It seemed like he had some trouble reading the defense. I mean, the first interception to Sam Shields seemed pretty blatantly obvious what the Packers were trying to do on defense, and they weren't really trying to trick the Bears. They were just staying pretty true to their form.
Yeah, I wouldn't get carried away with the interceptions. For one, we know that you're going to get that a little bit with Cutler. It's just his strong arm style of play, and there's pluses and minuses, and the pluses overall will outweigh the minuses. Two, those interceptions, the first one to me I thought was better defense than bad offense. It was there's a Clay Matthews interception, and I thought Tremont Williams drove on the ball perfectly. I mean, it's sometimes these plays are good defense, too. And then the other one was just pure miscommunication. I don't know whose fault it was, but that's the kind of thing that can be rectified.
Well, but this Bears defense isn't good enough to sustain these turnovers.
You mean survive the offensive turnovers?
Yeah.
Well, no, it's not, and that's why they didn't win last week.
I said that first interception was to Sam Shields. That was Clay Matthews. Sam Shields was the second one. So
yeah, well, Sam Shields has had another good season for them, by the way.
Well, in the Buffalo Bills this week, Detroit Lions caused some problems for the Packers. That was 2 weeks ago. The Lions have been grounded by that defense and that defensive line having a lot of success, and now the Bills are coming in with a new starting quarterback.
Yeah, they are, and that 2 weeks ago against Green Bay, that defensive performance was propagated by the secondary. And then last week against the Jets, same thing. The defense, in fact, the pass rush didn't show up a whole lot for the Lions, and the secondary rose up again. And so Darius Slay's gotten a lot better at cornerback, and I hope that sticks. I'd like to see that stick. I think, you know, they drafted him high, and the talent's there. It's a matter of keeping it all together. Rasheem Mathis has quietly been very stellar for them. And they have James Ahedibo back. They hadn't had him all year. So it's quietly a good Detroit Lions pass defense on the back end of things. And as far as Buffalo goes, here's exactly what happened with the benching of E.J. Manuel.
Starts 2-0. Yeah, now 2-2, loses the gig.
He didn't play horribly. The problem was where his bad plays came. It was on inaccurate passes and grossly inaccurate. And I think Doug Marone's thinking is, this is not an immediately correctable weakness. And we have mechanic issues in his footwork and his release. And the penalty, the downside of inaccuracy can be extraordinary. And his thinking, I'm sure, is we have new ownership coming in. The only way we all keep our jobs, the only way this roster stays together, is to put the best record on paper that we can. They can't afford to gamble with Manuel, and with Kyle Orton, at least they know they have a guy who will throw the ball where he means to throw the ball. That's the thinking. Now, the only concern I have, I get that. I understand it. I wouldn't have benched Manuel, but I get that the situation they're in, I understand why they would, and maybe I would in their same situation. Football-wise, he probably doesn't deserve the bench yet. What I'm wondering is, if Orton's now at the helm, what happens to your read option game? Manuel wasn't keeping the ball a lot. He wasn't a big part of the run game, but defenses had to respect him as a runner, and they leveraged that a lot for C.J. Spiller and Fred Jackson, and I wonder if that goes away a little bit now. And if so, what are they going to do for a running game?
And there won't be a whole lot of room for the Bills' defense to mess up in this one either, because we're not sure what we'll get out of that Buffalo offense. Did you notice in these last couple of weeks a lot more blitzing from the Bills? We talked about in the first couple of podcasts that the Bills were kind of shying away from sending many pass rushers, a lot of just sending four, and now it seems much more frequent that Doug Marone's team is now sending a qualified pass rush.
Well, what has stood out to me about the Bills lately is that they're a very fundamentally sound defense. I don't think they're blitzing. The blitzing has not defined them. They're not. I don't think of the Bills as a blitzing defense. I don't think they blitz any more or any irregularly compared to the rest of the league. They've been sound, though. And last week it started with stopping the run. They bottled up Houston, and Marcell Dareus had himself a ball game. And that's been the foundation. And I would be encouraged to find the Buffalo coaching staff. That's what you want. You want that kind of solid foundation. The blitzing will be bonus later.
Well, and the Jets don't exactly have to worry about stopping the run this week, but they are going to need to get some pressure on Phillip Rivers and that Chargers offense that has been pretty unstoppable so far. They're coming off a game against Jacksonville, yes, but we've still seen
poor Jacksonville. We do this every week. They're the only team we qualify like that. They're an NFL team too.
There's elite teams, and then there's the elite bad teams, and that's Jacksonville
and Oakland. Probably. Yeah, sure. Who else would be in that category?
Well, anybody? Who's the next? I mean, a lot of people put Tampa as that next worst team.
Well,
then
there's only two in that category.
There you go.
But I think when we talk about elite bad teams, I think like it's been a few blocks of years. Like you don't just
just get a reputation.
Yeah,
they
have that.
Even Cleveland's kind of in that little.
Yeah,
that little
and they're working
fringe.
Their way out of it. This game, San Diego Jets. I don't know, I'm going to watch it on Sunday. Do we want to do Geno Smith real quick? I mean, that's kind of the
kind of a similar situation as the E.J. Manuel
case. It is. In fact, you have a coaching staff on the hot seat, not an ownership change on the horizon, but it is a coaching staff on the proverbial hot seat. And it's a young second-year quarterback who similar styles of play in that they can both run if they have to. They're big and physically capable of playing from the pocket. I thought Geno Smith left a few throws on the field against Detroit, and that's never a good thing. But I also thought that he doesn't have any help. He's not getting much help. And the Jets spread out a lot in their passing game, and they ran a lot of isolation routes out of balanced sets. So two receivers on each side, everyone just running their own route. Conceptually, that is about as easy as it gets to defend. And so if you're going to play that way, you better have guys that can win. The Jets don't have guys that can win right now. Yeah, they don't. They don't have those guys.
Well, and with Geno Smith, I don't see a scenario where you want to just turn the keys over to Michael Vick. That doesn't make sense.
Well, because I don't think you go back from that, do you?
No,
I
mean, then you're done with Geno Smith. You got to make the decision that you're
Vick
moving
gets
on.
Hurt, until Vick brings himself.
And then you're back on the Smith wagon.
Look, I got a lot of hate mail from Jets fans because I wrote my Jets preview.
You always get hate mail from Jets fans.
They're the worst. Jets fans and Raider fans. All the Raider fans have been nicer to me because I've been saying good things about
Khalil Mack.
Yeah.
That's easy to do, though.
Yeah, it is easy to do. Don't tell them that.
He's really fast, and he's great off the edge. Anyway.
The Jet fans, they were mad at me because I wrote the Jets preview from the perspective of it'll be Vic and or Smith. Like, I didn't commit to one, and they were like, everybody but you knows that it's Geno Smith. This team was never Geno Smith's team, and now we're seeing that.
Sticking with the Jacksonville Jaguars, our favorite topic of the day, they're hosting the Pittsburgh Steelers. They're 0-4, the Jaguars, that is, and the Pittsburgh Steelers get a little break on defense.
No, John, there are no
Blake
breaks.
Bortles did look good last week.
And there are no breaks.
I liked what I saw from Blake.
Yeah, well, good. There are no breaks in the NFL.
No breaks.
There aren't. And go tell the Steelers this, because you could argue they had a break last week.
That's
too.
Right. Yeah.
They were at home against Tampa Bay.
Andy, we'll move on to the Monday night game where the Washington Redskins may be able to have a chance to give themselves some redemption from what we saw on Thursday against the Giants. But
the wheels
does,
came off.
Yeah, it does happen to be Seattle coming to town, which doesn't bode well.
Kirk Cousins can't stare down his receivers in this one. You can't. You're not going to get away with it.
Yeah, if it didn't work against New York, it's not getting by.
Right, or it's
Seattle.
Not going to ever. Yeah, it doesn't. It tends to not work overall. He got a little snake bit. Like in, you know, he looked a little bit. Like he was a guy hoping he doesn't throw his next interception. That might be something to be concerned about moving forward. Boy, I wonder what people think his trade value is now, right? Because I hear all the time he's worth a first round pick.
Rid of him
now he's a fifth round pick, right? That's Kirk Cousins is suddenly not the god that we heard he was.
It looks like he's having a lot of challenges reading the defense when he's late in the down.
Yeah, he was. He's not a late in the down type of player. He needs to play within the rhythm of the game. And usually,
it's what we've seen from a lot of these young quarterbacks, though, that you want those quick kind of decisions to be made, so they don't have to do this elaborate.
Yeah. Now, there's two ways that goes. It's either young quarterbacks need quick decisions because they need to find throws to get comfortable. Mark Sanchez was a guy like that, although he wasn't horrible late in the down. But then there's also the young quarterbacks that can thrive late in the down because they don't know the structure. And so the later in the down it gets, the less about structure things get. So really, you're in one of two camps. And it's almost always these extremes. As a young QB, you either need high structure or you need very loose structure, or at least the ability to play in that. I'm thinking like a guy like Blake Bortles, he has shown some improvisational skills. And that's a good thing. That's something he's going to lean on. That'll be a crutch. Now, as a coach, you'd never go in and game plan out of structure stuff. So you're always going to try to teach these guys to be quick decision makers. And that's what they're certainly going to have to do with Kirk Cousins. And they do know that unlike Blake Bortles, who was a number 3 overall pick, Cousins does not have the physical skill set to thrive late in the down.
Well,
he's not a ruthless
murderer. You can't
murder.
Throw 4 interceptions.
Of course you can't.
And
yeah.
So it's obviously going to cripple the offense if he's frequently turning the ball over. But there's going to be significant amount of pressure on that defense, too. We haven't seen a lot from the Redskins' defense so far.
I think that defense has a problem on its hands. They only play nickel against any offensive look. I mean, if it's a passing look, if it's 3 receivers or 4 wide receivers. And teams are going to start, and they have been, putting four receivers on the field and getting a wideout easily matched up against a linebacker. And usually it's been Perry Riley has been the guy with the big X on his on the top of his helmet.
Well, and Seattle doesn't do – I mean, they're not crazy on offense. I mean,
but they can go four receivers if they have to.
Right.
And they've actually become, as Brandon Marshall smartly pointed out to us early in the year in the interview, and it's held true since then, they become more of a three-receiver offense with Percy Harvin in there now, and they're a little more comfortable with Russell Wilson, just a little. But I think we're going to see them go after Perry Riley hard in some fashion, and Washington's going to have to come up with some kind of solution for it because right now they're getting exploited with their linebackers and mismatches.
Well, and that makes sense that they'll go with the more wide receiver looks too, especially with Zach Miller going out this week. He has surgery. He'll be out 2 weeks. So that makes sense because a lot of the times that linebacker will be matched up on the tight end, right?
Theoretically, yeah. I mean, they're still going to have to keep a tight end, though. And,
right.
And who's going to play? I'm looking up their depth chart now. Oh, Luke Wilson.
Luke Wilson.
They'll be
yeah.
fine.
I wanted to say Luke Wilson, but part of me always tells me don't say that. Is
you
that
know,
active?
I've got
it's
a from Luke Wilson has two L's in his name. Wilson.
Hmm.
And my word dictionary reads it as wrong. And I put all the players' names into my word dictionary so that I, you know, because I need to know how to spell their names.
Right.
But I haven't done Wilson yet because I'm worried that it'll if I ever have a typo
it'll
on all
the
other
all
Wilsons,
the Wilsons.
Yeah. Or just I won't catch other typos on Wilson's.
You
That's
could be
what
doing
I think.
A home improvement review or something like that.
I'm just sharing what I think of Luke Wilson every time. I mean, I could look up my Wilson notes. It'd be easy to find. I'll search the Will and the Son, but they'll be fine with him in there. He's not a bad player. He just has a weird name.
If you were the Seahawks, Cam Chancellor's having some ankle issues.
I heard he's fine.
But if you're
he has
going
new shoes
into a
now.
Game, I know you. Yeah, high tops are going to solve all his problems. But what I'm saying is, if you're going to a game like this where you most likely could win without him, well,
No. I know what you're getting at.
You never think like that.
You can't in the NFL. You can't. It doesn't work that way.
The week to week,
as we
no
say
break
each week,
league, yeah.
Everyone, and as we say every week on the show, the other team has good players too.
That's right. And I think you're a good player, Andy. And this was a good podcast, so I appreciate it.
Thank you.
We'll see you guys next week on week 6. I can't believe we're this far. Thanks for tuning in. You can subscribe to us on iTunes. Remember to follow Andy on Twitter @Andy_Benoit or myself @IngallsAngle. Thanks for joining us.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.